Accession number 106 4 8 reel 3.
Mr. George Peake, reel 3. Did you have any special Christmas celebrations?
No. No, no. We had a YMCA there, you know, but not just where I was.
What did the YMCA provide?
Oh, all the usual cakes and drinks, chocolates, all that stuff, you know.
That was at Abassier, was it?
That was at Abassier.
The main barracks.
That's right.
What kind of food were you getting?
Oh, pretty good. I just don't know, remember what kind it was, but it was pretty good, the food. And I enjoyed my food. And I was very, very funny with my food at home. But when I tasted their porridge, my mother used to try and give me porridge, but I wouldn't have it when she made it. But when they made it in the army and I had that, oh, it was glorious. I even swapped my bacon for it. I enjoyed it so much. I've had it ever since.
Now, it says here that in March you were moved to something called Rasseltin to guard some prisoners of war. Do you remember that?
Mm. I remember Rasseltin.
What do you remember? Where was it? I'm not quite sure where that is.
I forget now where we were. I forget now. Rasseltin. I forget.
You don't remember what you were doing there?
No, I don't. I remember another place I tell you about that might have been Rasseltin when we were on guard there. Two of us were on guard, and we knew about these throats being cut of the Worcesters, and we took our turns in marching all the way around, see, with loaded rifle. And all of a sudden, while they were there, I heard a shot go. I thought, oh, what's up now? So I got a bullet in my rifle, you know, and rushed round. He was lying full then. I said, what's happened? He'd put his foot in a drain hole, you know, drain hole that went. And he had his finger on the trigger, and it shot him in the air. But believe me, I don't know whether he'd done any guard or not. But when you do guards in a forest, it was in a kind of a forest.
This is Rasseltin.
Where we were on guard, in kind of a forest. And you can see, you think, it's just your imagination, you can see one person behind a tree, and they'll emerge and get behind another tree, and dodging about behind the trees all the while. And your nerves get a bit ragged. One or two of them might have fired at that. But I forget now where that was. That could have been Rasseltin. I just don't know where it was.
Another note you made is that you went for a 40-mile... Mm. Another note you made is that you went for a 40-mile route march in the hot sun. Do you remember that at all? A very long route march?
No. I don't remember that. I know we had lots of route marches. That might have been the one I was telling you about, but not 40 miles. Oh, we did 40 miles, I think, on the desert. 20 miles up there, fighting against Australia, and 20 miles back. You know, that way. We all came back with sore heels, blisters and blood in our shoes, and all that.
So, as you come to the end of the period, were you aware of the Gallipoli campaign before it started? Or was it a surprise when it started?
Well, it was a surprise when it started.
You hadn't heard any rumours about it?
No, there were no rumours flying about Turkey. As a matter of fact, now this is funny. It wouldn't do. I didn't know about it then. I was going to tell you about meeting an Arab.
Oh, go on then.
But I was at, but that was during the Egyptian campaign when we were almost coming home,
after Gallipoli.
After Gallipoli.
We'll come to that then, yes. So, what was the first you heard of Gallipoli?
First?
You heard of Gallipoli. When did you first hear about it?
Probably about, just after it started, about the beginning of May. We heard about it, the Australians were leaving, we heard the Australians leave. And we heard about them, the April. And then we heard that we were going somewhere, we didn't know where. So, I don't know whether we were at Alexandria or Cairo at the time, but immediately we got to embarked on the Nile, the River Nile of Hong Kong. And while we were on the Nile of Hong Kong on the journey, we didn't know where we were going properly, but we were given 200 rounds of ammunition, 150 in our pouches, and an extra belt of ammunition, you know, khaki one. And then we came to Gallipoli. Before we landed, we almost went into a French ship carrying Borghese army, you know, foreign legion men, foreign legionnaires. And they started to cheer when they saw it was us, and we started to cheer them. And then we were off. We jumped off our ship and got down to the cutaway part and along some planks that were laid on to the land. And all the time, the guns, from Asia Minor, was firing. We used to call it Asiatic Annie. That was firing all the time until we got to the ground. And then we saw right on the right-hand side of us was all these dead Frenchmen. I do remember that. And just almost in front of us, just to our left, was this gully. It was a gully, I know. We advanced up this gully at about 50 yards, and then we were turned up the gully, up the sides of the gully, onto where there was a guide near the top. And he was guiding us to a ditch. A very deep ditch. It was deep. We crept along this ditch and kept on and on until they said stop. We knew we got to, our company was on then. So I suppose when everything was right, they obviously gave the word advance. So we advanced then with our rifle and bayonet. It was a bayonet charge. We just dashed at the Turks, and the Turks retired right away. Well, they started firing again at us, and when we had to stop, we stopped. All in order, all organised, and they shouted, "Prepare to advance." That was it. So I touched the fella next to me. I said, "Prepare to advance," and instead of saying anything, he just lay there. And I tried to make him understand. Prepare to advance. No, and I shook him. He was dead. Dead as a doornail. So I had to get the message to the next man, past him. But fortunately I did do. And And then the line went along.
What kind of terrain were you attacking across? Mm-hmm. What was the land like, and was there any cover at all that you were attacking across? What was the land like you were attacking across?
The ground? Oh, a champion. It was just like going through a field. It was right in front of us was nothing but flat, as flat as almost as flat as a pancake. It just ran down the slightly bit, what do they call it, like a tableland.
Could you see the Turks' positions? Could you see where the Turks were?
We couldn't see them properly, no. Only when they got up to fire and run, we fired back at them.
And then, were you under much fire?
Yes, we were. They were firing like anything at us, as they could. But anyway, we...
How did you feel under fire? Because it was your first time under fire, except for the shells on the beach. How did you feel in yourself?
I know people won't believe it, but I felt I was having an adventure then. I've been reading the adventures about Tom, Dick and Harry, how they went through with it. And I was going through the same thing. I never thought of I could be killed any minute. It never entered my mind. Just went running along. You don't think of those things. You don't feel it, I don't think. We went running along until we were told to drop again. We dropped again. Then we went running along again until we dropped again. And then we had to dig in.
When you made this attack, did you have your packs and your helmets with you?
No.
What had you done with them?
Tore them up. I threw mine away, my helmet. Too much of a giveaway.
In what way? You mean it was too visible?
Well, a helmet is big and it shows. I think I put a cap comfort on or on a mess tin lid on my head to stop the rain coming in.
So, when you got to the limit, how far had you advanced altogether, do you reckon?
How far we'd advanced? Well, I should think a mile or somewhere about that much.
And how did you dig in?
We started to dig in then. We're taught to dig in, see.
Had you actually overrun any Turkish trenches?
No, there was no Turkish trenches up to then.
So you hadn't actually gone through a Turkish line?
No. I was with the first line. Well, I jumped over no trench anyway. I was with the first line. There were no Turkish trenches. And we dug in there.
How did you go about that? How did you go about digging in?
Oh, we had... on our backs we had entrenching tools. You've seen them, haven't you? And we had them, digging in with them. And we had two sandbags each. And as we dug in, we filled these sandbags. And rolled them up and put them in front of us. And then on top of that, we kept digging in and throwing the soil on top of that until we got headroom. And that's how we had to do. And while one or two, every now and again you got round it and fired. Keep them away. And then you start digging again while somebody else had fire and keep on, like a desultory firing all the time when we were getting down. Eventually we got down 2 or 3 feet. And that was night. It's too dark then. Too dark to shoot accurately. And it was later on that night when the fifth Lancashire Fusiliers, I think it was the fifth, you don't know, the fifth came along, and they were going to go over the top in the morning, because they got about 3 foot down, with plenty of soil on top, see, with the soil on top. It's hard work to dig with just an ordinary entrenching tool. So, when it was just breaking dawn, we had to lift these lift their left hook to go over to start advancing. But instead of when we lifted them up, they just dropped dead. The machine guns, I think every man had a machine gun. They seem to be throwing in machine guns, not rifles, machine guns, they're cutting the top of the trenches off. They just
There was a lot more fire when the 5th attacked than when you, the 8th attacked.
Oh, twice as much. Twice as much. Twice as much, or more than that. We couldn't move. We couldn't move at all for bullets. Anyway, we'd been on that time. So the KOSBs came along. King's Own Scottish Borders. They came along and they relieved us. We had to get back. So of course we trundled back to where we'd left our packs. And I must have been one of the last. Because when I got down, there was hardly anybody there. And there was plenty of packs there. Those were the packs that they were belonging to the fellows who had been killed. And in the dark, I couldn't find my pack. Couldn't find it anywhere. I had to get one. So I picked one pack up and carried it. Got out the trench, out of the ditch, and began to walk. And I found out there was nobody there. I got lost. Instead of walking down that way with the men, with the lads, I'd walk this way, see. So I went walking on and thought, where the devil have they all got to? And then I stumbled over the legs of one. Somebody sat down against a tree, some soldier sat down against a tree. I said, "No, hello, chum." I said, "Have you seen any troops passing this way?" No murmur from, not a murmur from him. So I looked down at him and he was dead as a doornail. So I continued walking on towards the beach, and I eventually saw a bit of a glow in the air, and I went towards this glow, and it was this ravine I was telling you about. But we first went up. I looked down and saw a fire, ooh, 60 miles down. So I slung my rifle over my shoulder and climbed down. With the aid of some bushes, there were trees and that knocking about. So I got down with them. And when I got down, it was our battalion. So that was the first episode that I had anyway. Of course, there was lots afterwards. Lots of the...
You still, at the end, when you, that's the end of your first... period in action. Did you still think it was an adventure at the end of it when you'd seen all your friends, some of your friends killed?
Oh.
Did it still strike you as an adventure?
It did. I never thought that I'd be killed. See?
What made you think that?
I've no idea. They brought... the rumour came round that 13 was an unlucky number. I'm going to make our wills out. Well, I've made my will out on page 13, and lots of them are, you know. So they all started changing the will from that page to number 14. I left mine where it was. And I said, if I'm going to be killed, I'll be killed. But I never thought I would be killed. And as it happened, I got away with it.
What about morale generally? Not just yourself, but
what?
Morale. What was it like in the
morale? Oh, it was champion. I don't know. I can't remember anybody being. They might have been afraid, and not show it. But there was no hanging back, no hanging back. If they had to go forward, they'd go forward. There was no hanging back. Always all on the go to go forward. I don't remember. May have felt afraid, I don't know. I never thought I'd be killed. I suppose I was too stupid.
Had you actually had to shoot at anyone yet? You'd been shot at, but had you actually shot back yet?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I was always shooting back. Had to do.
During the attack? During the attack. I was wondering what you were shooting at.
Yes, during the attack.
Who did you see to shoot at? Because you said you weren't sure.
Well, you see, when they come up at you, you'd shoot back at them. You've got to get your shot in first. Otherwise, you could be dead. You've got to get your shot in first. when we first went over, you see, when they had a trench, from our trench, to take their trench off them, well, you was lucky if you got over that. But those who did get over had to fight them in the trench and shoot them in the trench.
That was later on, wasn't it?
That was the first, next episode.
The next episode,
next episode. Yes, they had to fight them in the trench. And,
well, we'll come to that then. Where were you, so that night you were in the ravine, this gully.
Yes, that's right. And, in the ravine, yeah.
Where did you go from then, after that night?
I just don't know. We went into the firing line so many times. We went to Regent Road, Cross Lane, different places. They were the names of the places we went in. I can't think. Or later on, when it got so very, very difficult, that they were killing us, and others, not only us, not my battalion, but the Scots and the others in the division, you know, and, until the whole of Gallipoli was smelling terrible of the dead, and the bodies lying everywhere. And blue bottles, oh, just immense swarms of blue bottles were everywhere, eating their eyes, and starting with their eyes, and going over the faces, eating the faces. And when you come to have a biscuit with a bit of plum and apple jam on it, or something like that, you've got to be like this all day, and try and get a mouthful, otherwise you'd be eating them as well. I think there must have been many a blue bottle was eaten by our fellows.
I think we'll leave our trench warfare questions till after June the 4th. I think that's when you remember it best. Do you remember anything of the fighting before June 4th, though?
Not much, no. No, I don't. We were fighting, I know. I'm just trying to remember where we went to from out of the gully in that first episode. Where we went to from the gully, from there. But I know we kept going into the firing line, but I can't remember what we did there. We went quite a lot in the firing line, out of it. I know the only thing I can remember, really, is the June the 4th fighting.
Okay, we'll move on to that then. We'll move on to that then. I think that's probably easiest. What do you remember about what you were told? How were you briefed about June the 4th? Because you were going to be in reserve.
June the 4th, we were moved back. We were to be in reserve, you see. And I remember crouching in the reserve trench, waiting for an order to move forward. Now, the other parts of our division, I don't know which one it was. I believe that they captured Krithia, the village of Krithia.
They were attacking towards it. They didn't capture it, that's right.
They didn't capture it, I don't know. I wasn't there, you see. I was in the reserve. Well, we heard all the fighting going on, you know, but we, as I say, we were in the reserve. Now, the Turks were coming into in a big bodies all over, chasing our lot, who had been dilapidated, you know, with losing so many men, dead and all that. So there was nobody in our firing line. Nobody in our firing line. Hardly. And we were, all of a sudden, we got the order to move up. Move up the communication trench.
Now, you were still in A Company, weren't you?
Yeah, but this is a... I'm talking about A Company. Well, A Company went forward like that. I think we were the first company. Now, who followed after that, I've no idea. I can only talk about myself. Well, a fella, I know his name, but I won't talk his name. He got a spent shell came through, only a small one, about 2 inch. Came through and it hit him here. It went in his head there and stuck there and never went off. And he just dropped down there on his hands and knees, his head touching the floor. And I was right behind him and I had to jump over him to get along into the next one. And then as I got there, then another fellow near me, he got a bullet into his wrist. And his rifle flew out of his hand. And the next minute, we were in the firing line, just where the firing line was, and the back of the firing line seemed to have been blown away. Now, a shell let on this corner here of the firing line and the communication trench. It hit there. It must have been a bigger shell. And it blew me on my back. And my rifle out of my hands. And just at that time, there was two Turks jumping at me with their hands out. One was to grab me by the throat if he could. But I was too quick, I rolled over, and I rolled right on my rifle. And I got my rifle, and I found there was no bayonet fixed to it. The bayonet had been blown off too. So I rushed at him without the bayonet on, just sticking with the barrel. Lee Metford said the barrel protruding from. But before I could dig him, Lieutenant Wild, he came up with his revolver, and he had them both. They both put their hands up. Then they were both cornered. He said, "Leave them to me. I'll take them down the gully," and the gully was quite near. We were on this side of the gully, see, we were on this side.
The left-hand side or the right?
On the right-hand side of the gully, this time. So, we lined the trench then with our rifles. I got my bayonet fixed on and got my rifle pulled through and cleaned up and we jumped on the firing step and we watched. Now, the gully's in between, if you can understand it. Gunner's here, and we're here. And we're lining, and we're waiting for them coming over. And all of a sudden, we saw them coming. Instead of towards us, towards the left-hand side of the gully, you know, that way. And we could fire at them from here, without being fired on. And we were all up firing like anything at them, you know, and dropping them. When our officer shouted, I was only about 4 or 5 men off the gully. He shouted, "Cease fire." Well, what was ceasing fire for? They were all dumbfounded. And so they stopped firing and looked. And our troops had left their trench and gone for the Turks with the bayonet. But, oh, my God, just fancy doing that. And there was such a lot of Turks. There must have been 1,000 there charging over, or more. And they went for the Turks, and then the officer said, "Come on, in the gully." They're coming down the gully. They must have turned down from there and come down the gully, you know, towards us. We met them in the gully. And when we started firing, stood up firing, our lieutenant was next to me with his rifle in one hand and sword in the other, with his revolver in one hand. And